Welcome to Career Tools. This is Wendy.
And this is Amanda.
Today's cast, Minimum Viable Skill Level, How to Optimize Your Professional Development, Part 1.
The questions that this cast answers are, how do I choose which skills to work on? What is the minimum viable skill level and why is it important? And how can understanding minimum viable skill level improve my professional effectiveness?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
August 6th and 7th, we're coming to DC with our EMC and ECC events in person. Day one will be focused on the Manager Tools Trinity, how to manage your team in just 30 minutes a week. Day two is how to communicate with those around you so that they understand you better and you can get your point across. Come see us August 6th and 7th in DC. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
How do you choose what skills to work on when you're not given any guidance? Because human beings have a vast array of skills. I was thinking about this the other day when I looked at the painting cupboard, which has watercolor and acrylic in it, and it's next to the knitting that I could be doing. And I was thinking, there's so many art skills and arty things in my art room that I have tried, and there's all those skills that I could be practicing that I'm not. And even at work, there are a vast number of skills. You could and hopefully will spend your entire life working and on improving your skills in all kinds of areas. And it doesn't matter at home if you jump from painting to embroidery and only become average at both. But when it comes to your career, it pays to focus and actually become good at something and not just buy the supplies for everything. And this concept of minimum viable skill level gives you a way to select which skills to focus on. And importantly, when to stop trying to improve your skills. Because for some skills, you don't need to get any better at them. And you can better use that time to get better at those skills which are important. It's really hard sometimes to decide which ones, especially if it's something you like doing, which ones where you don't need to practice that thing that you like doing. I really like playing with computers and numbers and data sheets and things. I don't need to do it in my job. I really should stop practicing and concentrate on the thing I'm supposed to be doing, like writing.
So this podcast, we're going to cover first, what is the minimum viable skill level? Then know the minimum viable skill level for your job. Next, assess your skill level. And lastly, bring your weaknesses up to the minimum viable skill level.
Okay, so the minimum viable skill level, which we may abbreviate to MVSL, although that's actually as hard to say as minimum viable skill level.
Yes.
It looks better on paper, but it's, when you're saying it out loud, it's still hard. Is the lowest level of proficiency in a particular skill that allows an individual to adequately perform their job or role. So the idea is extrapolated from the concept of a minimum viable product in the tech industry, where the most basic product is released to the market early, and the company that allows the company to launch with the minimum amount of investment and get customer feedback early.
So further effort is put into the features that the customers say are important, not those that the developer prefers to work on. So essentially what Wendy was talking about earlier, what we need to do, not necessarily what we want or really like to do. So by focusing on the right features, the company is able to achieve a fully realized product without wasteful spending. A component of this idea is that those features that are not the further developed have to work. For example, the company may decide that they will have a light mode and a dark mode, but that multiple themes aren't necessarily something that the customer values. However, when the team decides not to work to further the themes, they can't just leave a button that says dark mode that does nothing, because that, the minimum feature, has to work as promised. Otherwise, there are frustrated customers who aren't willing to look at the features that were built past the minimum because the very basic issue doesn't work.
Yeah, if you're going to build past something and say, okay, we're leaving this at minimum, that minimum has to work. And we are extrapolating that idea to your job. So there are a number of skills, features, that are required in your role. And some of them are only required at a minimum level. And some of them are those that the customer, your boss, your company, your profession says are important. And when it comes to your professional development, you're going to make a choice to continue to develop some skills and leave others at a minimum level. And then you're going to balance that with spending your time and energy on professional development by following this minimum viable product model. So there's some things you're going to continue to develop according to the outside feedback, I guess, from customers, from your boss, from what people say, from the what you can see of what people need in your career.
In our extrapolation, product features equal the skills. So for example, every job requires communication. All jobs require the ability to understand what we need to do and to be able to communicate that it's done. It's not necessary that we all hear, speak, or write, but communication is still required. So that's the minimum viable skill level for communication in any job. You have a minimum level of communication that everyone has to be able to do. Now, for some jobs, for instance, marketing, the requirement for communication skills goes much further. Marketers have to be able to communicate to specific segments of the population about specific features of a product within specific brand parameters and entice the recipients of the communication to take specific actions. They have to be able to communicate all of these things and then, on top of that, convince people to buy it, right? That's what our marketers do. So in addition, before they get to the part where we see every day, they have to understand their client and be able to communicate the ideas and concepts to them. Marketers are often part of complex projects and need to be able to communicate status and progress. They have the equivalent of the latest iPhone in terms of communication skills. Not that brick that just makes phone calls, or I would say that flip phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that so many of us miss. They're like, I just wanted to make a phone call and send a text. But marketers, they have all the features of communication, not just a minimal level. So the minimum viable skill level in communication for marketers is significantly higher than that for the rest of us in order to be able to do their job.
In other jobs, even in the same office, the minimum viable skill level for communication could be much lower. For example, security personnel may only be required to greet people in the building, give them directions, and email a report at the end of their shift, which is not to say that all security personnel only have low communication skills, only that the role doesn't require the kind of communication skills that marketers or a marketing role requires.
So this is an important concept for two reasons. First, it makes no sense for the company to pay someone with the communication skills of a marketer to staff the security desk at the front of the building. Any skills that the security guard has above and beyond the requirement for their role are being wasted. If the company is paying an increased salary for those skills, they're wasting money. And the security guard should be definitely moved to marketing immediately. They have those skills. Those are harder to find,
yes.
Right? Promotion.
Yeah. The only time you see this is sometimes when people are very young and they're either studying or they've just finished their studying and they've got summer jobs or temporary jobs. Sometimes you see a security guard with a master's degree or someone working the checkout with a master's degree. And that's kind of an exception to this rule, I guess. But in permanent jobs, you want the right level of skill for the right job from a company perspective, because you want to be paying the right amount for the level of skill for that job. Because if you're overpaying for that skill and that role, then you have increased costs, which you then have to pass on to the customer, which means that your company has higher prices and you'll be priced out on the market, but your customers will go elsewhere because your products are too highly priced. Even though paying a security guard an extra $20 an hour doesn't seem like a big deal, when you keep going backwards along the consequences chain, you get all the way back to that thing in Target is an extra $3 and the customers won't buy it.
And second, it also makes no sense for that security guard, assuming that they don't actually want to become a marketer, to put in the time and energy to improve communication skills to the level that is the marketer. If you don't need to have the higher level, spending your time, your effort to increase those skills doesn't make any sense. It's not needed, and therefore, you really don't need to do it. It doesn't matter how good of a communicator they become if those skills are going to be wasted. And we'll come back to that idea when we talk more about your skills and how to choose which ones to work on.
I think that's the other exception around studying, because often what we do is we study a certain subject in school and in university and college, and then we never use that subject. And I think between 60 and 90% of college is learning how to learn and learning how to be a grown-up and live on your own and so on. So actually the subject you study isn't that big a deal, especially in the US where you have a much broader education in college than I did. For example, mine was very narrow because we choose a subject right at the beginning. We don't do math and language and we don't do all of those things. We just have a subject in college. So in college, you might study something. I studied business German, which is economics in German, and I don't use that on an everyday basis. So that's the one place where you might have much higher level skills than you ever use. But once you get into the workplace and you're looking at a career, and some people have a passion for, say, history, ancient history. You're never going to use that in your job, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about job-related skills that you're talking about learning or developing in order to further your career and focusing those. And the one exception I can think of right now is those skills that you may have learned at college that you don't necessarily use later.
Yeah. And a lot of my college was just learning it to be able to pass it on the test. Right?
Exactly.
But you had to learn it.
Hey, hey, Career Tools listeners. We've got some exciting news just for you. For years, you've been tuning in to boost your career. Well, we've been listening too. Behind the scenes, we've cooked up something special, a new offering designed specifically with you in mind. While we can't reveal all the details just yet, imagine having tailored resources that grow with you, from entry level to executive. It's Career Tools Evolved, crafted to meet your unique needs at every step of your professional journey. By becoming a Manager Tools licensee now, you'll have access to everything you need. Trust us, you won't want to miss this. We're thrilled to take the next step with you. After all, your career success has always been our mission. Stay tuned. The future of Career Tools is about to get even brighter, and it's all for you.
So the marketer and the security guard is one of the same skill, that communication skill, in different roles. So I'm going to give you another example just to help solidify this idea of minimum viable skill level. And this is the same skills in the same role where developing the skill does make sense. So we're going to talk about accountants who have specialist skills, which have to be reached to a minimum level to even begin their jobs. So in order to be an accountant, working as an accountant on your own, you have to pass the accountancy qualifications. And there's different ones and they're different in each country, but it's fairly standard that you cannot be an accountant without passing accountancy exams.
So keeping this in mind, after years of practice, many accountants develop an intuition for numbers and financial statements. Actually, a lot of accountants claim not to be able to do basic math. However, if you show them a balance sheet, without even thinking about it, they can tell you that something's off. They don't have to do the basic math involved, but they just know. And they know it immediately. They're able to manipulate the numbers in their heads and tell how it changed in one area that should have been affected by another. They can often tell you the trend of the revenue without even looking, right? But this is years after they've developed these more specialized or specialist skills.
So in this case, if you were an accountant with the minimum level of skills entering the profession, it would be worth you investing in achieving that higher level skill because it enhances your career and it brings the opportunities of working at a higher level. And this is one reason why a lot of accountants end up working in audit, because if you see lots of companies' books and you go through them and lots of different companies working different ways and lots of transactions, that's how you start to get that intuition for something's off here. And if you do 2 or 3 years of that, then essentially you're investing in that skill of intuition, of knowing that something isn't quite right here because I've seen 1,000 of them and I know what it looks like when it's right and I know what it looks like when it's wrong. And no matter how good a communicator, a security guard is, they are never going to get promoted based on their communication skills. Because that skill isn't valuable in a security guard past a certain level, right? Maybe they get made into the team leader. Maybe, I don't know how many levels there are. Maybe there's an area where they're covering, you know, certain, it's a contract and they get to manage like a bunch of people. But still, their communication skills are never going to need to be at the level of the marketers, and they're not getting promoted based on their communication skills alone. Whereas the accountant who gets faster at understanding numbers, who gets that intuition of, I've looked at 1,000 profit and loss statements and I know exactly what's going on the moment I look at it, they will get promoted because amongst the other skills they need, that skill is important or useful in an accountant. And for the rest of us, the ability to add a column in Excel and know that at the bottom you write equal sum or whatever it is at the bottom, and that's it, adds them all up, that's all we need. But if you want to be promoted in accounting, you need that intuition piece. You don't need it, but it comes with practice, and it's one of the things that says you've done enough of this, that you probably have all of the other skills.
Yeah. So let's talk about how do we know the minimum viable skill levels for your job. For every skill that is required in your job, there is a minimum level at which you must be proficient. So we've kind of already talked about that a little bit, but now we're going to talk more specifically on yours. So being able to use this information begins obviously with making a list of the skills and the level of competence that is required. And there are various ways to discover all of this information for your job itself. First, you can look at your job description. If you don't have one or it doesn't list skills, try searching for advertisements for the same job or similar ones in government roles. These often have much more information, especially about the required skills at the job advertisements, more so than in the private sector. So look at your job description, see what skills are listed, and that can help you know what those minimums are.
For some reason, well, I know why, but jobs in the government sector have to list the skills much more completely than jobs in the private sector do. So if you want to know the skills, that's one way to get around it, is to find a similar job and see what the list says.
You can also look at your performance review. So read both the pre-formatted information from HR and your manager's comments. It's common for the two to not necessarily agree on the level of competency that's required for the certain skills. So you can compare the two.
In part because HR has some standard thing about, you know, everybody at this level has to have this, and it's across, you know, 10,000 people or however many people are in your company. And your manager is talking about one specific role in his specific team. It's much more targeted. So that's why they often don't match, but at least you have an idea of both, you know, because often your manager will only talk about the skills that he either thinks you're really good at or he thinks you're really bad at, and then not tell you about, not give you an idea of what the level is required of the other skills that are required in your role. Where, so then you need the HR piece in order to fill in the gaps for you.
And you can look at any other performance information that you've had from your boss. So you don't have to wait for your performance review. Statements like, you need to do better at that, can be very helpful. Write that down, right? If they say you need to improve on that, it's a good indicator that you should develop that skill. Or the opposing side is, you are really good at that. And these can be very helpful clues to the competency of your specific skill level. So if they're saying, yes, you need to improve, or you're really good at that, that's awesome. And maybe you don't have to spend time developing that skill.
HR in larger companies and in government, as we just said, there are defined competency models for different roles. And the nice thing about it is, if you're not in one of those companies where HR publishes competency models for your roles, other companies do. So even if your company isn't big enough, try Googling it. It's amazing. Oh, and now we have ChatGPT. I bet ChatGPT knows.
Bet it does.
I said that a year ago, but I'm pretty sure ChatGPT can get you started.
I mean, double check it, but it's an excellent starting point, at least to help guide your search for sure.
Yeah. Observation is obviously a really good way to find out what skills are required. You can watch colleagues in similar roles and the roles you want to identify common skills and what marks someone out as good or better or worse. I think people don't do this because they think that, well, I guess watching people does sound creepy.
Well, when you say it that way.
Yeah. Because say watching people sounds creepy. Actually, it does sound creepy. Observation doesn't sound quite so bad.
No, it hits better for sure.
I think we often think we know these people if we work with them every day. And so we don't stand outside our relationship with them and think, why does that conversation with that person go really well? Why is that person so much better at presenting than I am? Why does that person sound so much more in control? Or why is this going so badly for this person? That's one of the things Toastmasters taught me, is because we have to give evaluations, I've had to practice evaluating someone that I know really well, and to kind of separate the performance part of it from the what's actually being said part of it. And if you can do that, you can see the different skills and see what the commonality is in people that are doing your role. And that will give you a clue about what the skill is that's required and how well everybody's doing it.
Yeah. And just to kind of pile on to that, if you're looking at the skill and you can break it down into the behaviors that they engage in.
Yes.
We all know how big at Manager Tools we are on engaging in behaviors or identifying them. But behaviors are something that you can absolutely learn. So if you can break down not just what they're doing, but break that skill down into the behaviors that they're engaging in, you can actively learn those behaviors. So break it down even farther based on your observations and just not necessarily the skill, but how do they engage in that skill? It can be very helpful, at least to know how you can change your behaviors or a behavior that you might need to learn.
You're right, because a lot of the time it's, you know, why does somebody present better? Well, because they speak more slowly, because they start convincingly, their first sentence comes out well, as if they had prepared it. They don't so they sound like they prepared. They have a convincing ending that sounds like they believe it. You know, it's okay, those aren't all necessarily behaviors, but they
but it can even be like, how are they standing?
Yes.
How are they using their arms? Are they making eye contact? A lot of times,
are they
loud
enough
presenting? Yeah. I mean, we could go a lot into behaviors because that's one of my favorite topics. But but we'll get back on track. You can also do this through professional associations. Professional organizations can often outline the core competencies for the roles that fit within their umbrella. So it almost goes back to, you have to learn the skills to pass their competency tests. So they're going to have it outlined in order to do those jobs, what the minimal skill level should be, because you had to pass the test in order to get into some of these jobs. But now it's a clear outline of what the expectations are.
And this list doesn't need to be exhaustive or perfect. Pareto's principle, also known as the 80-20 rule, is where roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes, absolutely counts here. If you've never done this exercise before and you have 10 skills, say, that's enough to start with. You can always come back and add more later, but 10 is a good number to start with. We'll leave you this week with thinking about or creating that list. And when we come back next week, we will tell you what to do with it. Thanks, Amanda.
All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.